You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Scabies and gentlemen, boils and ghouls, fiends from beyond the binary, welcome to another very special spooky edition of the Toilet of Hell radio show. That's right, we're continuing this October spooktacular with another discussion of a horror movie that is genuinely good and not bad. That's been the key thing here. I've been having so much fun these last couple of weeks having guests on talking about things that we like. You know, how wild is that? We never do that shit. Anyway, I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me, I've got the golden boy, Jordan, otherwise known as 365 Days of Horror. How's it going, man?
Golden boy, motherfucker. I'm 365, motherfucker.
Indeed, indeed. We got a very special guest today. We're finally doing that crossover that we've been talking about for years now. You know, folks that are podcast completionists will know that there is another podcast that is done by the Toilet of Hell. It's like the bastard redheaded stepchild of the regular podcast, but whatever. It's got the Australian guy and Kit. Kit has another podcast we've mentioned on the show before called I Hope You Suffer. Today we're joined by his co-host, Nathan, because fuck Kit. Kit's not allowed on.
Kit's already been on the show before.
Yeah. Nathan, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm not used to talking about a movie that isn't terrible.
Yeah, that's the thing about your show, man. I look and I see, like, in my notifications, like, there's a new episode, Clowntergeist, and I'm like, no, fuck that, dude.
Yeah. It started as an idea of, like, Kit and I being like, let's talk about, like, movies that are usually considered bad that, like, we actually like Jason X and shit. And then it turned into, like, let's talk about Nudist Colony of the Dead. And
yeah, you really took a hard turn down the sci-fi original path.
That's all Kit.
I know, and I fucking hate that shit, and I hate Kit for, like, bringing it up.
It's, the bane of my existence.
Yeah. The asylum is bad, and you guys are making it worse.
Pretty much. It's like, usually what'll happen is I can't say that I suggest good movies, because, like, the three worst ones we've ever done were my suggestions. But, like, it'll be something where we'll do, like, two or three good ones in a row, and I'm like, Kit, you want to pick something? And then it's always, like, Mansquito.
Fuck you, Kit.
Well, I think there's bad horror movies that still have charm.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of bad 80s horror movies can still kind of be fun, whereas Clownado isn't.
Yeah, like Slumber Party Massacre 2. That's a bad horror movie that's fun. But anything involving a Nazi shark is garbage. There's no redeeming value.
That movie was, like, so ridiculously bad that it became, like, watchable. Because all of the shark heads were just, like, paper mache. And so, like, it looked so ridiculous that I was kind of like, well, this is at least fun, I guess.
Yeah, okay. I suppose there are charms to be found in all kinds of things, but
It was very, like, Return of the Killer Tomatoes kind of goofy.
I will say that I do have beef with you and your co-hosts, though. I remember excited to tune in to listen to your discussion on Stephen King's Thinner, and none of you liked it.
I actually didn't like it until I rewatched it, and I was like, this actually isn't as bad as I remember.
I like and it so much I made it my Twitter AVI.
It's like the one DVD that I've bought specifically for the podcast that I did not immediately return.
That seems like a pretty good scam, though. Can you, like, just get something and return it immediately and be like, this didn't work, or
it's usually, like, I'll buy a DVD for, like, $2 and then just sell it somewhere else for, like, $2, so.
Fair. It's not a bad deal.
This movie wasn't up to my horror movie standards.
I was
store credit.
Extremely surprised that Dreamcatcher was not good.
That movie. We suck.
Don't say that to my wife. She loves the shit out of that movie.
Why?
Dude, I don't know. She's a Stephen King fan. That's her thing.
That's what, like, so we, Katie was on all those Stephen King episodes, and around like maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago, we invited her to be like a permanent third co-host, and she's always the one that's like, well, it's not like terrible, but I mean, it's pretty good until the ending, like most Stephen King stuff. And I'm just like, stop sticking up for this movie.
She's not going to listen to this episode, so I can go ahead and say I don't like Stephen King that much. I'm not crazy about it. I like the movie Thinner because it is just wildly offensive in every conceivable thing, like from the evil gypsy like villain to which you're not supposed to say gypsy, it's Roma people. I'm saying that because they are being offensive in the movie, to the absurd fat suit that our main character wears.
it's ridiculous. Like
he causes the death of that woman because he's getting dome while he's driving. Like
I tried to like quote unquote read. I was listening to the audiobook of It, mm-hmm. and I got halfway through, which was like 24 hours of fucking listening to it, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's just like, I don't know, like, I like some of the movies that are based off his books, but anything I've tried to actually read or, like, listen to from him is just, he's too wordy that he doesn't need to be, like, you know, it doesn't need to be however long it is.
Yeah, I mean,
like, well, he gets paid by the word, like,
yeah.
Like, not really anymore, like, that's how they used to do it, and no one told him.
Well, he came to acclaim when he was just pounding rails and, like, sitting at his typewriter for days at a time, all coked up to the gills. So I guess he just learned to write a lot. That's his technique.
That's my favorite period, because that's when he said, he was just like, everybody's butchering my books for movies, so I'm going to direct one myself, and did Maximum Overdrive, which is fucking ridiculous.
We need AC/DC on this one immediately.
Oh, boy. That soundtrack sucks.
Yep. But this show isn't about Stephen King or even bad horror movies. This one is about a very good horror movie. So Nathan, when I asked you if you had a suggestion for what we could watch on this one, I was pleasantly surprised that one of your top picks was a little movie that came out in, I believe, 2013. It was released in 2011, but it didn't get a U.S. release until 2013, called You're Next. Now, when did you first check this one out?
This was a movie that I watched on maybe Netflix whenever it kind of hit streaming services, that I was like, oh, this looks like it's going to be just like a dumb slasher, and I was going to put it on in the background. And it got to be kind of when you get to the dinner scene and shit kind of goes haywire, that I was just like, okay, this movie is amazing. I can't just have it in the background. And I ended up starting it over and then just rewatching the whole thing. And go ahead.
So Jordan, when did you first catch this one?
Yesterday.
Oh, shit. Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you had seen this one before.
No, the reason why I never watched is I recognize the poster from like Netflix. It looks like a very generic Netflix horror movie.
It does.
And I think that's why I've always avoided it, because not so much now, but a few years ago when Netflix had a whole bunch of horror movies, most of them were really bad. And this kind of got lumped in just by the look of it and the generic name.
So I remember I saw this one at the theater. This came out within, I'm going to say, a month or two of The Purge. That would be the original Purge, not the first Purge. They both looked pretty similar to me. They're both home invasion movies featuring scary people in masks. But I saw the exposition for The Purge, like, for one night, crime is legal. I'm like, yes, that's the one for me. And I went and saw it, and I'm like, that was actually not very good. I didn't like it very much. Granted, every other Purge movie is fantastic, and I love them to death. That first one is not very good. So I had an itch that wasn't scratched, so I went and saw Your Next, and I was so blown away. I was like, that is probably, that's got to be my favorite home invasion movie of all time now. What are the other contenders for home invasion movies? Like, what's another one you think might be good?
Well, you got like The Strangers and Funny Games, which are kind of like go hand in hand a little bit.
I'm not a Funny Games person. I don't like just watching horrible shit.
No, yeah, that one's just real bleak.
And I get the point. Like, yes, you enjoy the violence. This is all about you and your need. Whatever. Fuck you. I'm not an academic, all right?
I can't think of the name of it. It's not... Is it a... I can't remember if it's a Hitchcock movie or not. I don't think it is. I think Audrey Hepburn was in it, where she plays a blind woman that is, like, in, like, a home invasion. I can't remember the name of it.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. There was also a home invasion, like an inverted home invasion movie that came out fairly recently, where it's a bunch of fucked up kids trying to rob a blind man.
Oh, Don't Breathe.
Yeah, I fucking hated that one, man.
I saw it in the theater, and it wasn't like I saw it specifically because I liked the Evil Dead remake.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, I was like, I'll give this a shot. And there were parts of it that I like really enjoyed, and then you get to like the weird, like, dude just holding women hostage to like impregnate them and shit, and it's real weird.
Yeah, that was not good and bad to me. I feel like I gotta ask this because you just saw it for the first time. Jordan, what were your thoughts? Did you like it? Did you not like it? Was it trash like you assumed?
6.5 out of 10.
Okay, all right.
I was not in love with it. I think partially because home invasion movies are okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not my favorite subgenre. I think it's kind of, I don't want to say by the numbers, but it's your standard home invasion movie. I mean, going back to even the 70s, that's what a lot of horror movies were. Last House on the Left, or The Hills Have Eyes,
right?
Straw Dogs, that sort of thing. So it's kind of well-worn territory at this point. Overall, not bad. I think the movie lost me towards the end when the big reveal happened, and my idea of what I thought was going to be the big reveal, I think, was better. So it's kind of like, oh, all right. Well, there's 20 minutes left.
All right, well, file that one away, because we'll want to revisit that as we get further in, because I'd like to compare notes with what happened with what you think would be better. So I guess to start this off, let's go ahead and give it a rating. What do you think you would rate this one, Nathan?
I rated it a 5 out of 5 on a Letterboxd, but I think if you're going for like 10, probably like a maybe like 8.5.
All right, that's pretty strong.
My only real critique of it is that it doesn't need to be as long as it is, because I think it's 2 hours, if like maybe just a little shy.
An hour and a half.
Was it really?
Yeah. Huh. At least the version I saw. I don't know if there's an extended.
I watched it on Blu-ray. It may have been like an extended.
That was like, dinner scene.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give this one a 9 out of 10. I feel very strongly about this one, for reasons that I think that we'll get into. I think primarily we should note that this is not some pitch black home invasion terror. It's actually very funny. There's a lots of moments of levity in here, especially playing with the conventions of the genre, I suppose. And it's not going to get all fucking, you know, wacky Joss Whedon style with the Cabin in the Woods, thank God. But it's still pretty funny. Should we go ahead and get into what this whole thing is about?
So essentially it is a well-to-do family getting together for like I think a holiday.
Yeah, so it's this couple that is they're celebrating their 35th wedding anniversary.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And so to do so, they're going out to their new old mansion in rural Missouri. In inviting all of their fail children over to celebrate with them. The film, I would like to note that the couple the people that play this couple, Aubrey and Paul, we have Sorry, I had the names here.
Paul is Rob Morin.
Rob Morin,
Barbara Crampton.
Rob Morin, I apologize, I can't talk to you. Rob Morin, who you will recognize as the evil bowler in Kingpin, the guy that's all mobbed up. He's got the hot girlfriend that disappears with Woody Harrelson. And Barbara Crampton, who is one of those OG Scream Queens. This couple, though I believe Barbara was around 50 years old when she made this movie, they look to be about maybe 40. They're super, super young and attractive. And what was throwing me off is like, how did you have your children when you were 5 years old?
Like, I think one of the interesting things is, like, this movie brought Barbara Crampton out of, like, semi-retirement.
Huh.
She had, like, had kids and, like, stopped doing whatever, the Days of Our Lives, whatever soap opera she was on. And, like, had, like, a 5 or 6 year gap in between movies. And I guess they sent her the script and was just like, hey, you know, we would be interested in you being in this movie. And I think at first she was like, I don't think so. And eventually kind of conceded and now is like on this string of just making pretty rad horror movies again.
Yeah, she's hitting her mid-80s stride again when she did things like Reanimator and Chopping Mall and Puppet Master. All those movies well know and love. So yeah, she's back and doing more horror, including she did last year Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich. Which I have, I'm going to say negative interest in seeing.
I think Kit watched it and was just like, yeah, this is not good.
Of course Kit watched
it. Which tells you if like Kit watched it and didn't enjoy it, that it's real bad.
I'm going to have a hot take and say none of the Puppet Master movies are good.
Same.
I don't disagree, but I think I've enjoyed watching some of the earlier ones. I mean, I know they're not good, but I've enjoyed watching them. I feel like it's the same thing with Phantasm. I don't think those movies are good, but I like watching them as well.
I like the first Phantasm. I can't even remember anything about the rest of them.
The first one's a little bit more artistic, I would say. There's some stranger things happening. Anyway, to begin this movie, we open immediately with a middle-aged man just pumping away at a very unhappy looking young woman. He finishes up and goes and takes a shower while she runs downstairs and pours herself a screwdriver and puts a burned CD on the CD player that just repeats one song over and over again. Somebody breaks in, just kills her. The guy gets out of the shower, sees your neck scrawled in blood on the window, sees her body below it, and then gets similarly gut up himself. Pretty strong intro before you even get to the opening credits. Little heavy.
Yeah, it starts off pretty bleak until you kind of meet the kids of Paul and Aubrey.
Yes.
I think one of like what's kind of interesting is that like 2 years later, the guy in the beginning, Larry Fessenden, something like that, stars in a movie called We Are Still Here Barbara Crampton, where they play a couple. That's pretty good.
Huh. If you pay attention, you'll notice bit parts from everybody in this movie. I believe Joe Swanberg that plays Drake Davison, the real dickhead kid. Do you remember the guy with the really punctual face?
That's like always starting fights with Crispin.
Exactly. He was in the thing that I immediately recognized him from was the segment in VHS where he's on a road trip with his wife to like the Grand Canyon and he gets slaughtered by his wife's girlfriend. I don't know if you guys remember that one.
I have seen all the VHS ones, and the only one I can remember is the one with like the aliens and the dog with like that has the camera on its head.
Oh yeah, that one was pretty good.
Simon Barrett like wrote, I think, all of the VHS movies, and he's like the guy in the tiger mask in this movie.
No way.
And he wrote this movie as well.
That's pretty crazy. The director of this one as well, Adam Wingard, he did another movie that Netflix obsessives have probably seen called The Guest, which is very, very good. I picked up that soundtrack on vinyl, actually.
It is. I looked him up today, and it is wild that he went from like this to now doing Godzilla versus King Kong.
Yeah, how incredible is that? He also did Death Note, which my wife was watching. It had it was an adaptation of an anime that had who was that feller with a giant face? I do this fucking every time. I can't remember the fellow with the giant face. Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe playing a demon. Did you guys see that one?
I have not.
Don't. It sucks. It sucks major ass. Aubrey and Paul, they make their way to their big new mansion. They're getting all set up and prepared to have folks over when Aubrey hears something, and it's revealed that she has some kind of anxious condition. So she begins full on freaking out and runs outside while Paul goes to investigate, where he almost maybe finds something, but he's interrupted by one of his shitty children, Crispin, I believe, or is it Crispian?
I think it's Crispin.
Okay. What did you think of that character, Crispin, Jordan?
I guess he's somewhat of a relatable character, I think, for the audience in comparison to all the other annoying family members. He's
the least offensive.
the least offensive, but, you know, he mentions he's, like, struggling. He doesn't get a fellowship. He hasn't had any published writings in a while, and now he has this new girlfriend who was formerly his student and knows his family is judging him.
Yeah. So that's fun. They go to sleep the next day. All of the shitty children come over. We're introduced to Drake and his wife. Drake immediately he plays the role of shitty older brother very well, and then he starts like boxing Crispin. He's like, stop, quit it. which I really appreciate when you get to those character faults immediately. we also have Felix and Amy. Felix is a scumbag, as Drake points out, and his girlfriend Z, who is a goth lady. Amy, the daughter, comes over with her boyfriend Tariq. Who you'll recognize as the guy playing the baseball fury in Murder Party, if anybody of you saw Murder Party.
I have not. Is that good?
It is actually very good, especially for being a student film.
Wait, that's Tyreek?
Yes.
That's Ty West, right?
Is it? No way.
I'm IMDb. Yeah, that's Ty West.
Let me pull this shit up. This motherfucker, he's Ty West. He was in...
He, like, directed House of the Devil and The Invitation?
No way.
Wait, not The Invitation, The Innkeepers.
Wait, so he wasn't in Murder Party. I've got the wrong motherfucker here. All right, he just looks a lot like them then.
Ty West is one of the... He put, like, Lena Dunham in, like, all of his movies before Girls.
You motherfucker. This guy's canceled. Anyway, eventually everybody comes together for a dinner where they start immediately fighting and being just genuinely shitty. And our man Ty West hears something at the window, stands up, and gets brained by a goddamn arrow. It takes everybody a while, too, to stop bickering with each other to realize that Amy's boyfriend just got his brains blown out all over the table.
Yeah, it's pretty much... Aaron is like the first one that kind of sees it out of the corner of her eye, and like he just stumbles around for a second before anyone else looks over.
Yeah, this is where we realize that Aaron, Crispin's girlfriend, is a little bit brighter than everybody else, and that number one, she can notice when somebody's been murdered 3 feet away from her, which is difficult for everyone else. So she pulls everyone down as a volley of arrows starts coming through, including one clipping Drake right in the back, which is very funny to me. Immediately everybody starts trying to just rip this arrow out of him.
It leads to like one of my favorite moments in the entire movie when he goes like running out of the house later.
Aaron leads everybody to barricade themselves with chairs to lead them out of the room, the dining room with all of these windows, so they can avoid the volley of arrows and find safety in the main hallway. Where they get to the hallway, they realize this is not good. We need to do something here. Jordan, can you describe what exactly happens next in trying to solve this issue?
No, I can't, because I don't remember.
I can't. Is it Amy is the daughter, right?
Yes, Amy is the daughter.
They eventually, like, they're all bickering about who is the fastest kid. And it just ends up being like, she's like, just everybody shut up. Like, I'm the fastest. One of us has to like make a run for it. See if we can like just get past wherever these arrows are coming from and call for help. And so I think it's Paul and Aaron are going to open the door. She goes running by. Their theory is they won't expect her to be going at full speed.
Good theory.
So she goes running, and as they open the door, she immediately slices her throat on piano wire that they have set up.
It is really funny.
Like, that's the one thing, is this movie is pretty violent, but a lot of it is like very, I don't want to say like Three Stooges kind of comedy violent. It's just like real over the top to the point that it becomes funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Part of me wants to describe this movie as like, what if the family from Arrested Development is cornered by a bunch of murderers?
Oh God, I wish that movie was real.
I feel like Job would be Felix.
I picture Job as being like Drake, who would be the one with like the arrow in his shoulder through most of the
movie.
That's
probably more accurate, yeah. Job is everybody in this movie, really.
Pretty much.
So they realize that Amy is just bleeding profusely out of her neck, and she of course dies. It's what happens when you bleed profusely out of your neck. And they start trying to figure out other ways to basically escape, and just in the process get themselves murked in increasingly stupid ways. It's basically putting Barbara Crampton upstairs so she can like just be miserable and grief alone. She gets cut up by somebody hanging out under the bed, and they realize there's more than one feller coming to take them all down. And everybody is basically pretty freaked out about this whole thing. Jordan, what were your thoughts when it was coming to the person hiding on under the bed? Did you think there were more? What was your thought?
I figured this was a team effort.
It's got to be, right? You know, there's a lot of them. There's like eight family members. You can't kill them all alone. You're not Leatherface. Even Leatherface didn't do it alone.
Yeah, he had a whole family, too.
I feel like it's at the suggestion of Felix and Z, that people increasingly make bad decisions, to their end. But at the same time, what nobody's counting on is that Aaron, she's crafty. I don't think we mentioned this, but she's got an Australian accent.
Yeah. And it doesn't come out until a little after the halfway mark that she was raised by a dad who was extremely conspiracy kind of minded, and like raised in like a, I can't remember how she
survival. It was a survivalist compound, but it's not enough to be a survivalist compound because she has an Australian accent. It's an Australian survivalist compound in the outback.
Which, if you could survive in the outback without getting eaten by a giant spider, you could probably survive most things.
Yeah, so most of the survival skills that she picked up from her father were things like applying pressure to wounds so that people don't bleed out, and how to swing a meat tenderizer really hard. So she's able to dispatch folks in interesting ways, and eventually uncovering that this was not a random occurrence. This was actually planned. Jordan, why don't you go ahead and say tell us about the plan behind it?
The plan for you go ahead. Sorry, I'm not paying attention.
How about you go for it, Nathan?
The plan is essentially, which at you it kind of unfolds throughout, is that at first it's like Felix and Z that you think are behind it, that are basically dispatching their entire family to get their inheritance, which would be like, I don't know, they never say like a number, but in the millions of dollars.
I think it's more like $1 million, because it seems like the stakes were fairly low.
I think Crispin says like millions at some point, but yeah, it comes out like towards the end that Crispin is also involved. Yeah. Like Crispin disappears throughout most of the movie. He at some point like he goes like running out, and of course, because he's part of this, ends up getting, you know, quote unquote past arrows and like whoever's outside. I think Drake goes running after him, which is one of my favorite moments, where he goes to under the wire and clips the arrow on the wire.
Just like, ow. Yeah, so he decides at that moment to just rip that arrow out of his back, where he immediately like passes out from blood loss.
Yeah, after taking like a bunch of Oxycontin or some shit.
Yeah, no, he's a total pill head. It's also one of the more fun things about this movie. Z and Felix, though, I think that they're really good evil characters, and as the plan is, I guess, coming closer to fruition, and Felix is feeling a little bummed out about, you know, murking his own brother and watching his father die in front of him, Z approaches him on the bed where Barbara Crampton is dead and says to him, I think one of the funniest lines in the movie, why don't you fuck me on this bed next to your dead mom?
Shockingly, he is not into it.
Z is pretty nonplussed about the whole thing. She's like, we never do anything exciting. He's like, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, he's like, I don't think that's a fair assessment.
Lots of fun things going on here, including Aaron setting up some Home Alone traps. I think it's a really underappreciated aspect of this movie, where she sets up two rows of 2x4s with big nails sticking out of them next to the window, so anybody jumping through would catch their feet if they happened to land just right, which is kind of a wishful thing, I suppose. But
yeah, it's set up so there's like one that's kind of more in view, and so that you wouldn't see the ones right next to the wall.
Yeah, and
the guy sees it and then is like, oh fuck this, and just steps right past the wall and steps right onto a board.
It's kind of fun when the camera itself is in the mask of these mass killers, and you realize, oh, your depth perception sucks. Like you have no peripheral here, bro.
They are absolutely like the worst masks, because this just like literally like a slit for eyes. Like, I don't know how they see anything.
What is the point of wearing the mask? Because eventually they all take it off so that they can threaten Felix.
I mean, I think it was just basically like a visual thing.
That's fair.
And what's the point of the movie being called You're Next?
Well, they scrawl it in blood on walls.
But why?
They were big Goldberg fans.
But that's like what happened in the beginning of the movie, like when they killed the neighbor. Why write You're Next in blood on the glass and then kill him? To scare him for a second?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess, wouldn't the body of his girlfriend just be scary enough?
Yeah, why bother write You're Next? And it didn't even matter. They were all just part of a plan. Why not just... I go through the trouble.
See, this is why you're not an artist. Oh, wait, you are. Fuck, I'm not. No, it's one of those silly things that just, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. So, of course, it has to go in a horror movie. I would like to mention that I was Googling around on this for this, and I found a review that blew my mind a little bit. Can I share a bit of this with you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you know that Focus on the Family reviews horror movies?
I did not.
And I have to ask why. Why does like a right-wing fundamentalist Christian group even go through the trouble of like saying, basically making Reverend Lovejoy's wife watch a horror movie? Is it just to punish that person?
I would like to just be like a fly on the wall in that room, like watching some of these movies.
Well, let me go ahead and give you the review from Focus on the Family, and we can judge based on their words whether this is a movie that's good for us or bad for our families, you know? Paul and Aubrey have been married for 35 years. It's time to celebrate. And hey, that celebration is also a pretty decent excuse to pull the whole family back together again. It's been a while since all the kids were under one roof. It'll be good to see, at least for Paul and Aubrey. For the kids, who are all 20 and 30-somethings with their own live-ins and spouses, it'll be a little less good, because in truth, they're a pretty dysfunctional lot. There's Crispin, a chubby college teacher who's dating one of his younger students. There's Drake, a smug jerk of a brother who's married to a like-minded wife. There's blonde and bubbly Amy, hapless as ever and arriving with a pretentious filmmaker boyfriend in tow. And there's Felix, known for messing everything up every time. He's paired off with a dark and edgy girl named Z. It only takes a few minutes before the siblings are squabbling once again with significant others wincing, and Mom and Dad thrust back into the role of UN peacekeepers. Were they really thinking this would be heavenly? The family getting together this weekend is starting to look like it, in fact, will be a little bit hellish. And they don't even know yet about the neighbors who have been murdered right up the road, or that the killers are about to show a family full of dysfunctional siblings what it really looks like to be torn apart. I love this Disney-fied like description of the movie. We have positive elements from Focus on the Family, which I'm glad that they have nice things to say. Once the brutal attacks begin, there are a few characters who want to help those around them, and one person, Crispin's youthful girlfriend Erin, takes some meaningful steps towards saving the family. Indeed, she's one of those rare horror movie protagonists, and certainly the only one in this film, who actually keeps her wits about her and uses all the skills she learned in life to save others in danger. Unfortunately, her efforts don't ultimately draw down the final body count, they just add another killer to the morbid mix. Spiritual content. Before dinner, Dad bows his head and prays over the meal. I guess that's why they reviewed this one.
I heard there was like a prayer in this movie. We should review it.
But now we're getting into the good stuff. You ready? Sexual content. The movie opens with a naked couple having sex in bed, the camera catching quite a lot of skin and a bared breast in the midst of the groaning, panting movements. Afterwards, the woman dons panties and an open shirt that doesn't keep much covered as she walks around. Z begins to initiate sex with Felix as they lay next to a dead family member, the girl indicating that the body nearby is a turn-on. We see Crispin and Erin in bed, both wearing t-shirts and shorts. They're not married. So
Jesus Christ.
It describes the violent content movie in the movie, which is even funnier when I see this. Here we go. Crude or profane language. There's about 30 F words, 5 or so S words accompany abuses of God's name. Drug and alcohol content. The family members all drink wine at dinner. Crispin reports that he bought whiskey to the celebration. Drake has a bottle of beer. A woman mixes herself a drink and walks around sipping it. Z smokes. Other negative elements. A bottle of urine has been left in a closet. Do you have any notes that you would like to add to that, Jordan? What else does a Christian-focused family need to know before they sit down, everybody, in front of the sofa to watch this?
I'm surprised they didn't mention Drake's abuse of Vicodin.
That is a good point. They weren't watching very closely.
On the eighth day, God created Vicodin.
Well, as long as it was prescribed, they're fine with it.
They didn't show a prescription, so...
Yeah. Oh, there you go. The fact is that in today's world of uber-gruesome, realistically gushing Hollywood nastiness, you can expect all films of this type to eventually push their characters in some form of bloody ground chuck by the movie's end. The camera will closely examine hacked-open wounds. The dying will writhe and scream. No clever twists and turns will change that core genre fact. So in the end, it's simply a question of who's been grotesquely impaled and bleeding out on the floor, and who's doing the grotesque impaling. And who's finding any of those grotesqueries entertaining? It will surprise you to know that Focus on the Family gave this a half a star out of five. I guess the half a star was for the prayer at the beginning of the dinner.
How are they not going to mention, like, wrong use of a blender?
Why don't you describe the improper use of a blender for us?
So at some point, Felix and Z are like chasing down Erin and like fighting with her in a room where she's like strangling Z, and Felix kind of comes up behind her. She like fights him off, breaks a blender like over his head, and then when he gets on the like falls down, she just jams the blender part into the top of his head and then plugs it in, which I don't know if that would work, but it makes a pretty ridiculous scene.
Like, I can't even make a proper margarita with my blender, so maybe they've got like one of those Vitamixes or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's a Vitamix.
Yeah, that's a premium shit. If you want to, you know, squish someone's brains around, you gotta spring for the good one.
It makes a pretty gross sound of like whatever hitting skull that makes it pretty effective. But looking at it kind of afterwards, you're like, OK, that's kind of goofy, but it works.
It's very goofy. I feel like the physics with skulls in this head don't quite make sense, because there's several skull stabbings, like just breaking right through the hardest part of the skull with like a kitchen knife.
Yeah, she stabs Z like right in the top of the head with just like a probably like 10-year-old steak knife.
Yeah, maybe she's like, you know, not, she didn't develop over the soft spot like infants have.
Her fontella never like fully closed.
There's some really cool shots in this one, though, where she's laying exhausted next to Z and Felix when they're dead. I feel like that's framed very perfectly. Just this exhausted Australian outback survivalist lady after she murders these two creeps.
Yeah, I like the way the movie was shot, because they shot it on like handheld to make it feel kind of more panicky. But like, it's not that like super shaky where it kind of makes you nauseous to watch it, kind of how like VHS is.
Yeah.
Like, everything is kind of kept as, you know, like in frame and like as a shot, but it all like, it moves around a lot more realistic, as if you're like watching this happen.
There is a scene where Erin lures one of the killers into the basement. She knocks out all of the light bulbs in the basement, so it's completely dark. And she sets up her digital camera in a way so it's automatically taking photos on like a 3-second delay or 1-second delay or whatever. And so you get this really beautifully done shot of the killer investigating the camera. And then in the strobe flashes, you see Erin sneak up behind him and murk him. And I feel like that was incredibly well done, especially like, you know, you're getting into a slasher movie. You're not even like expecting anything halfway done properly.
Yeah, that's like I said, like the first time I went to watch it, I was just like, oh, this is going to be like a dumb slasher. And then it's kind of like things happen, and every time you're kind of like, OK, like I know what's going to happen, like something completely different happens. And it was kind of like a pleasant surprise the first time I watched it.
The ending of it is a little bit interesting. As you mentioned, Crispin, they finally shut down Felix's cell phone jammer that he got off the dark web, which is why nobody was able to call the cops. So she picks up Felix's cell phone as Crispin is calling and saying, like, hey, is it done? I'm sorry, I'm a pacifist. I can't do this. So she realizes that her boyfriend was behind it the entire time. He's apologizing to her and saying, like, baby, I'll take you to Paris. Maybe we'll get married.
He offers her $500,000.
Yeah. And she just stabs him right in the ear. Oh, and then the eye immediately afterwards. And then gets shot because that's the moment that a cop decided to go up to the window.
Yeah, and then, like, earlier in the movie when she's setting up all of the Home Alone stuff, she sets up, like, an axe tied up at the front door with, like, a brick on it.
Yeah.
So, like, as she gets shot and, like, in the shoulder and falls down and is kind of, like, comes back into, like, consciousness as this cop is called for backup, comes walking through, like, opening the front door, and she tries to say no as this axe just buries deep into his chest.
You get a blood splatter of "you're next," and then the credits. I think it's very cheesy, but I loved it.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, realistically, what would happen for Aaron there? Like, you know, even if the cops hadn't shown up, you've essentially killed every single person in the house. How do you explain that one away?
I think
there are bodies there with masks. They did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's fair. What do you do? I guess if she successfully killed that cop, though, she could also say, I didn't do it, it was someone else, but I don't know how you explain that bullet wound. It looks like it's the Outback again for me. I don't know, what did you like about the movie, Jordan?
I guess creative action. I think that helped keep things moving along. There was enough characters where lots of them could be killed by various means. Yeah, that's about it.
What did you not like about it?
Kind of a generic overall story. It could have been any other type of home invasion movie. And like I said earlier, the reveal was kind of bland. I guess for all the buildup and for all the time it took to get there, just some kids wanted some money from their family, and this is how they go about doing it. Eh.
What would you alluded to it earlier in the episode? What would your twist be?
So early on in the movie, I think it was a discussion with Aaron and Crispin. He mentioned that I believe his father was involved in like a Raytheon type corporation.
Yeah.
And he's just like, well, we're not fascist or anything. My thinking was that this was going to be some sort of like anarchist group that's taking out some sort of evil, rich Republican family. And this is, you know, they go from rich person to rich person, killing them and whatever, if they want to Robin Hood the money or making the world a better place, and that's the "you're next."
I think they're
going down the list.
That's like the if this movie was made like now, I feel like that's exactly what it would be.
And I would give it 10 out of 10 instead of 9 out of 10.
Yes.
No, I agree that Raytheon bit at the beginning is kind of a red herring. Because it doesn't really come up again in any other way. I had a moment watching it the first time where I thought that it could have something to do with, like, a rival weapons dealer like Halliburton taking them out. Like, stay off our turf!
It really is, like, a movie that the first 25 minutes don't matter, other than like realizing that everybody, you know, like, this is so and so's girlfriend, this is the kids. Like, none of the stuff they really say makes that much of a difference to the plot.
No, but it is, I don't know, I think essential to having a horror movie that you stick with, you want to have some kind of feelings about the characters other than these are bags of meat that will soon explode out of my screen.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it works in portraying enough of the people as just being shitty that you're kind of waiting for them to get killed.
That's true.
Like, 'cause for the most part, really, like, Erin is kind of the only person that you're just kind of like, okay, she doesn't seem like that terrible. Like, all of the kids just seem real shitty.
I didn't think Amy was that bad, nor Ty West for that matter. But now that you mentioned the whole Lena Dunham thing, he definitely deserved it.
I just like the fucking conversation with Tariq and Drake at the table where he's just like, oh, like, why don't you do like commercials? I think that's like the highest art right now. And is trying to explain to him that you could do like documentary style commercials and shit.
Yeah, I had my documentary show at Underground Film Fest. Is that, do they show the movies underground? Like, just such a convincing shithead. I love it.
Yeah.
Drake, for his part, does pretty well in this movie. You know, he makes a little bit further than most. He takes a lot more abuse than others, too.
Yeah, he gets hurt a lot, including numerous screwdrivers to the chest.
Are there some closing thoughts that we need for this one, other than what we've already covered?
The one thing I really enjoy this movie is the kind of sort of twist on like the final girl, where she's like, Erin is just kind of a badass throughout the entire thing, as opposed to being like scared and like cowering through the entire movie and then having to like build up to like, you know, fight whoever. Definitely. At the end. Like, she's the only smart person throughout the entire thing, and it, I don't know. I really enjoy that aspect. That's kind of one of my least favorite parts about most slasher movies.
Yeah, she's completely competent the entire way through. She's really does dispatch these guys with some ease.
Yeah, I think the one kind of fun reason to watch it, other than the kills, is you get like a different take as opposed to every Friday the 13th movie and all that shit.
Yeah. I think she only lets out like a frightened scream once or twice in the movie too. It's like,
yeah,
gotta stay together, gotta keep it calm, gotta keep moving. You're next. Go watch it. I like it.
Yeah, it's good.
Jordan, I know that you've been itching here for a bit. Is there something that you would like to tell us about?
Well, I rub myself with poison ivy. Oh, that's not what you're talking about. That's not why I mentioned. No, since this is sort of a heavy metal podcast, occasionally we do talk about it. Machine Head has put out a new song this week. Have you guys heard it yet?
No, thank you.
I thought Machine Head broke up.
Everyone left, and then he got new people.
Including one of the guys from Decapitated, who's been credibly accused of sexual assault, which is interesting.
Oh, God, is that true?
Yep.
I thought that was a touring. Like, I don't know if he's in the actual band or is he just touring with them right now.
I thought that Vogue joined, but let me go ahead and verify that so I don't slander somebody unnecessarily.
It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us a little bit more.
So, yeah, put out a new song, and the song itself is, like, musically fine. Like, I don't think you would ever really pay much attention to it if it was like any other band. There's a decent solo in it. Like, I don't want to defend Rob Flynn, but he can still play guitar. That's not why I'm talking about it, though. I'm talking about it because of the lyrics. Lyrics that I posted on Twitter to the joy of many people because they are so, so bad.
Why don't you give us a taste of them?
One life, one will, black heart, black still.
I'm pretty sure that's not a Machine Head lyric. Like, that's definitely a Jamie Jasta lyric.
I was gonna say it's a throwdown song.
Ignore the hate. It's do or die, motherfucker. Okay. Die, motherfucker.
That's a Fury of Five song.
It's a dope song called Die, Motherfucker, Die.
Oh, that's right.
This is your time. My hate is real. This fire, it kills. No other choice. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die. Yeah. I don't give a fuck about you haters and your hate. You assholes better duck. I'm coming swinging out the gate. There's what? Not a metal band. I ain't influenced.
Oh.
Now I'm calling out the Judas. Every band's the fucking same. And all I hear is all you bitches commenting your chatter. We'll do it over. You hated Bastards. Because make your sick, your mind is made before. Sorry, this is lyrics off of like genius.com, so it's not the best. We're not Chimera, nor Strapping Young Lad. You want to hate it, but you need it so bad.
So that just tells me that he does not know any bands past like 2003.
Yeah, I haven't listened to a new metal band in 20 years.
Well, I think the Strapping Young Lad line goes back to like a year ago or a year or two ago, where they released a song that pretty much had the same exact riff as the Strapping Young Lad song Love. And people calling them out on it, specifically metal sucks.
I remember that Devin Townsend was also incredibly generous about that. He's like, yeah, I mean, it happens all the time. There's only so many notes. I'd like to back up a bit, though. He said that there's not a metal band he hasn't influenced.
I ain't influenced, but yes.
That seems like a pretty bold claim. Again, because there has been 20 years of metal since the heyday of Machine Head. I don't know, like, can we get Power Trip on or Blood Incantation on and see if they're big Machine Head fans?
What would you do if they were?
I would delete this entire podcast, all of it.
We're big Burning Red fans.
Try to see Believe This in Me. I think that speaks to all of us. This ain't just a paycheck to pay myself. Machine Head's in my fucking veins.
Oh.
One life, one whale, black heart, black still. Ignore the hate, it's do or die, motherfucker, et cetera, et cetera. I don't give a fuck about your stupid little scene, reaction videos, and all your pussy little memes.
Oh, God.
This is what happens when old men get on the internet. They just completely distort their own view of the world. They're like, metalmemes.com is the place to go for all of my metal information.
How many fucking bands I gotta bury? Say a prayer to Mother Mary. Welcome to the slaughterhouse. I hear you motherfuckers talk, talk, talk. See, I'm one in a billion. I'll fucking kill a million. Imitators step into the terror dome.
A lot going on here, man. Who is he buried? What bands has Machine Head buried?
I think that says it.
Violence?
Yeah, that's fair. Although I think that those guys got together without him.
They did.
I'm going to go see them without Rob Flynn in January.
You should dress up like Rob Flynn in the From This Day video. Spiky hair and the pleather red jumpsuit, and be really pissed off when he's not on stage.
Hold up a sign with the lyrics about the metal memes on it.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Also sounds like a lot of work. I don't think I can grow my goatee that long in time.
You have pugs. They shed.
That's true. I got a lot of animals. I can just bind it all together.
I just use feathers.
Yeah, I got plenty of those too, man. Is there more to this?
There is. Oh, thank you for asking.
Oh, good.
I'm fucked up in the head. Pitch black. Everything's shed. Again, this is genius.com. So don't fucking push me. All I see is blood red. I tried to warn you. My demons will eat you alive. Shred you to pieces. 100,000 fucking knives. My soul is septic. Dripping lead. That's why I'm fucked up in the head.
If you told me this was a Limp Bizkit lyric, I would believe you.
Yeah, this
fucked
could
up
be,
in the head.
I mean, this could be Amir, this could be Hunt the Dinosaur, just any of these bands that we goof on.
Welcome to the slaughterhouse. It's good. It's good and not bad. I love that ostensibly the music on this one is, you know, mostly modern era Machine Head, but he's definitely rapping these verses. He's got some grit to his voice, so he's not full on, you know, Burning Red, but it's not far off.
He's come full circle. He's for a while wasn't that album just like not on any digital platform, and like he wouldn't talk about it or play any songs from it, and now it's okay again.
Maybe it was the other guys in the band that were holding him back from doing the new thing. I mean, because this is pretty new.
Yeah, probably. I would assume he's some sort of band tyrant, and you know, this is my band. You're gonna do what I want. And if you don't like it, take a walk, homeboy.
Yeah. By the way,
do you think he just like wanted to continue with like the rap rock stuff like the whole time, and kind of got like bullied into the blackening?
It's possible. Like, that's entirely possible. It would make a lot of sense to me. It is worth noting that, that is, you know, the original member from Decapitated joining him on guitar, Vaug. So that guy fucked around, destroyed his band, and is now in, I guess, the biggest nu metal band around, which is, hey, there you go, nerds. That's what your fave is doing now.
Probably going to play in front of a lot more people than with Decapitated.
That's true. Probably shouldn't bother touring the States, though. God. I hate that you've brought this into my life.
It was going to happen one way or the other. Might as well come from me.
That's fair. Well, I made you watch a movie you didn't like. You made me fucking listen to Rob Flynn.
I didn't dislike the movie. It was fine.
I know what that means.
It means you're next.
Oh my God.
For no reason, because we came up with a title and couldn't really explain it otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't make me second guess this. I still like it. Nathan, what should people do if they want to hear more from you, and I guess from that other fucking guy?
You can find I Hope You Suffer on pretty much any where you listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. You could follow us on Twitter at I Hope You Suffer and Instagram at I Hope You Suffer Podcast. Yell at Kit at Leif Berrickson.
If you want to.
Just do that.
This being your first time on this program, is there anything that you would like the Toilet of Hell listeners to know?
Watch Santa Slay. It is a very good movie that we did on the podcast that has Goldberg, which ties into your next.
Fuck, there we go. Wrapped it up in a neat little bow for us. folks, we'll be back next time. We were going to do The Gate with Metal Tex, but he doesn't have power because California is run by libertarian shitheads. So that might not happen, but we will figure something out to do. we're hoping for the best for him. Pray for Metal Tex. all right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We love you.
One life, one will. Black heart, black still. Ignore the hate. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. This is do or die. My hate is real. This fire, it kills. No other choice. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die. I don't give a fuck about you haters and you hate. You assholes better duck. I'm coming swinging out the gate. There's not a metal band. I ain't influenced. No, I'm calling out the Judas. Every band's the fucking same. And all I hear is all you bitches commenting your chatter. We'll do it over, you hated bastards. Cause make you sick. Your mind is made before it hits. You didn't hear a fucking thing. We're not Chimera or Strapping Young Lad. You wanna hate it, but you need it so bad. This ain't just a paycheck to pay self. Machine heads in my fucking veins. One life, one will. Black heart, black still. Ignore the hate. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. This is do or die. My hate is real. This fire it kills. No other choice. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. I don't give a fuck about your stupid little scene. Reaction videos and all your pussy little memes. How many fucking bands I gotta bury? Say a prayer to Mother Mary. Welcome to the slaughterhouse. I hear you motherfuckers talk, talk, talk. I bless your body with some chalk, chalk, chalk. See, I wanted a billion. A fucking chameleon. Imitate a step into the terror dome. One life, one will. Black heart, black still. Ignore the hate. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. This is do or die. My hate is real. This fire, it kills. No going back. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. Die. I'm fucked up in the head. Pitch black. Everything's dead. I'm fucked up in the head. Don't fucking push me. All I see is blood red. I try to warn you, my demons will eat you alive, shred you to pieces, 100,000 fucking knives. My soul is septic, dripping lead. That's what, why I'm fucked up in the head. Ach, go. You motherfuckers talk, talk, talk. I bless your body with some chalk, chalk, chalk. The burning infection, the lethal injection, that'll put you in a coffin, bury you, and walk on off into the night. One life, one will. Black heart, black still. No giving in. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. This is do or die. My hate is real. This fire it kills. No quitting now. It's do or die, motherfucker. Die.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.